how do you know that you're over-relying on AI or not? I think it's sometimes easy to get too lost in the sauce of like, I'm just trying to like write my blog post. So we have a number of writers actually who sign up for Pangram. They check their own work just because they don't want their work to be seen as slop. And so Pangram is saying that their work is AI, then that means there's not enough of their own voice in their work.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to A Journalist's Guide to AI. I'm Yumi Wilson, your host, and today we have a very special guest. His name is Max Spiro, and he's the co-founder and CEO of a company called Pangram Labs. Now, we're going to learn a lot more about this company that focuses on AI verification, but first, let me tell you a little bit more about Max. Max, his most recent job, he was working on autonomous vehicles at a company called Nuro. He's also worked on machine learning products at Google, Two Sigma, and Yelp. Max holds a BS in theoretical computer science and an MS in artificial intelligence from Stanford University. When he is not building, he is an active member of a group or club, and he'll tell us more about this place. It's called The Magic, the Gathering Cube Community. Like I said, we're going to learn a lot more about what Pangram Labs does. But first, Max, I want to welcome you to our show.
Hi, Yumi. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I talked a little bit about your background, but tell us a little bit more about how you went from working on autonomous vehicles, doing machine learning products at Google and other places, to starting your own company.
Yeah, so I've always been a technologist. My background's been in AI and machine learning since basically as long as I have been studying computer science. But I think something we noticed in 2023 was GPT-4 had come out, and I realized this is just very different technology. This is a major step change in what AI looks like from before, where it's more like image recognition and text understanding to text generation. And so this is like clearly a new paradigm. We're very early in this new technology. And a lot of what I've been thinking about is, what are the second order effects of this technology, and how can we help mitigate any negative effects and outcomes?
Yeah. So you and your partner, his name is?
Bradley Emmy. It's my co-founder.
Okay. So the two of you said, well, I guess my question is, why go from creating products that use some sort of AI that's getting better and better by the day, to, you know, creating a product that is verifying or testing, like, hey, this is generated by AI, this has assistance by AI, this is human written. Why go from that to what you are doing now? Because, and I ask this because as an educator and as a, you know, a former journalist at The Chronicle and other places, it's, you know, that's the big question, right? That are we using AI? How much of AI is being used, and so on?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there's no shortage of people working on AI products that use large language models to do different things to help you out, whether it's like looking at your calendar and finding a time that you're free, or just being a chatbot you can ask questions, or making customer service more efficient. There's a million use cases. And for everyone, there's multiple people working in this space. But what I'm really worried about, and the reason why I'm doing Pangram, is I'm worried about the future of the internet and communication. I think communication needs to remain authentic. Some people have a view of the future where everybody's AI agents are just talking to each other, and like you no longer need to send an email. You just get like a summary at the end of the day of what your agent talked to other people about. And to me, that's a pretty like grim future. Like I personally, like I really value authentic communication. And I value reading things that are the words of other people I respect rather than the words of an AI. And that's a big reason why we're doing this.
Yeah. And that's so actually refreshing to hear from, you know, folks. I'm not quite sure how old you are, but without asking that question, you know, I think being an older person and knowing my colleagues who used to work at newspapers when they actually were newspapers, you know, many kind of lament the kind of loss of that authenticity that you talk about. And they worry that the future is really going to be these agents talking to one another. How do you think Pangram can prevent or, prevent the kind of the wave that we seem to be in?
So, I mean, I think what we're going to see more and more of is people are going to see the harmful effects that a proliferation of LLMs are having on their platform or their community. The first people, the like very forefront of this, are educators, where they're seeing students are using LLMs, and this like proliferation of LLM usage is causing their students to not actually learn as effectively. Instead, they're able to bypass a lot of their work and just have the AI do it instead. And so they're seeing the negative effects of like not being able to have a reliable way to tell whether an essay was AI generated or not, or even if their intuition says, this looks like it's AI generated, like how do I then take that to the next level and actually like talk to the student about it?
Yeah, you've mentioned two very separate to me as an educator, two separate things, but let's focus on that first part, which is there is a proliferation of AI use, you know, generations, younger generations, almost kind of are growing up with AI, if you will. So there is a concern about using AI at school because you may not be learning. But what about, and this is just to kind of look at it in a different way, and because I do agree that
I'll take the devil's advocate point of view.
Yeah. So what about that everyone is using AI, and by not allowing students or not encouraging students to use AI and having a robust discussion around usage and learning through that way or model, that colleges are kind of missing out on what's happening on a global scale. I just recently went to Laos, spent 2 weeks at the university, National University of Laos. And what I found very interesting, it wasn't a discussion of whether people use AI, whether students use AI or whether faculty, it's everyone is using AI. And what they wanted from me along with journalism skills was they wanted to know what the best practices are. So let's just kind of stay there for a moment.
I'm happy to unwrap that a bit.
Because I
actually don't recommend that anybody goes and buries their head in the sand and pretends that AI doesn't exist, or even worse, like completely outright bans the use of AI. You know, like don't talk to any AI ever. I think you're setting yourself up to be disadvantaged in the future if you do that. But what I think is that people need clear guidance and guardrails on what is an ethical way to use AI and what are my goals here, whether I'm learning or writing or something else, what are my goals and what is the best way to achieve them? So if I'm a student, I want to become, the goal of my English class is to make me a better writer. So if I ask AI to write all my essays, is that actually going to make me a better writer?
That is the way to look at it, because I think, you know, even with my own usage, you know, when you rely too heavily on AI, yes, it can create something that seems polished, grammatically correct. They know where to put the commas. But I think what it really gets down to is what comes from your own thinking process, what comes from the idea that you came up with the, you know, original content, maybe pushing back against what's already been written. So in saying that, like I think about journalism, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and what I've said in panels and talks that I've given and been a part of is that the one thing about journalism is that they're looking for information that is not in the LLM as we speak, because they're trying to interview people that haven't been interviewed. They're trying to find documents that haven't been obtained or haven't been, you know, kind of looked through so it can be made sense to the public, you know, it can be made a sense to the public. So when you think about journalism particularly, and maybe within that space, the education space of, let's say, how a journalism student should learn, what would you say? How?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, again, the same exact things of like, yes, what are the goals for a journalism student? Is the goal for them to go and like figure out ways to uncover information themselves or find new sources, or should they be using AI to like do a first pass and help them actually be like more effective in like uncovering more sources and let them spend the time on what matters, which is actually like synthesizing this information and then turning it into an interesting piece.
And what we've also seen within the organizational space, you know, when you look at companies, you have Associated Press, you have Reuters, you have BBC, you have Der Spiegel, a number of large news organizations, and even small ones now using AI to some degree to do summaries of weather or maybe traffic or simpler things. And there's this understanding that it is being used. So how does one tell the individual, we want you to be authentic and original, when the organization itself is already parsing out some of those duties once held by humans?
Yeah. If we're like exiting the learning space where we're on to like into the real world, what we care about is not actually like how much a journalist learns on the job, but whether they're producing something that somebody wants to read. And so I think this is where the concept of slop comes in. So this is a common term that means unwanted AI use, oftentimes that you're seeing in the wild. And so oftentimes, like I've seen news articles that look like complete slop. It looks like it came straight out of ChatGPT, like no editing or anything. And honestly, like, I don't want to read that. It makes me lose trust in the outlet. If somebody's using AI to like turn numbers about weather into something nicely formatted in natural language, like I don't care about that. That's totally fine. But I think like companies are going to need to recognize that there's this trade-off between labor and consumer preference. And like people care about the human touch and they want to see that in the works they're reading.
What is the preference? I mean, in terms of, I've seen different studies, you know, and I'm just thinking maybe they're a little bit old now. But that said, you know, they want to know the story was written by humans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's true. I think people want to know the story is written by a human. They see the byline, they see who wrote it, and they want to know that's a real person, not an AI-generated face and bio. And they want to know that somebody actually like put effort into this. And yeah, if something is worth reading, then surely somebody else thought it was worth like putting effort into to create in the first place.
What about the, I'm forgetting where exactly, but I think it was one news organization had an AI robot anchor, it was an AI anchor.
Yeah. I mean, that could be a fun novelty. I'm not mm-hmm. gonna bash on that. I think like it's fun when it's just one. I love taking Waymos. I think like there's a great space. Like it's truly a novelty for me to be in a self-driving car. But similarly, the more and more AI encroaches upon our spaces and the more we see AI everywhere, the novelty of it wears off. And we go back to wanting what's familiar and what has a lot of effort put into it and is high quality.
What's interesting about that, I teach over at SF State, and the other day, last week of class, one of the students had like a huge box of vinyl.
Oh, that's cool.
Exactly. And that, you know, I heard a story recently that says vinyl is up. People are buying albums. So it just made me think of what you just said, which is this desire to kind of go back in time, away from electronics, away from smart everything, to a time when you actually had to manually like take the record out, put it on a machine. Is that kind of what you're suggesting, that younger generations who are kind of exposed and surrounded by smart devices and technology are kind of saying time out?
Yeah. People are opting out. People don't want to see AI everywhere. It's the same sort of voice and format, this like assistant e-voice that says, you know, it's not just this, it's that. And it's like, it uses the same cliches over and over.
Yeah,
and
true.
Yeah, people are getting tired of it. I think, unfortunately, what we're going to see is actually we're nowhere close to peak AI adoption. Even if AI capabilities don't improve for the next 5 or 10 years, there's so much room for AI adoption to grow, which is also going to increase these pains and the amount that people are just unhappy with this AI content.
Yeah. And, you know, you said something about 5 to 10 years from now. So I got to go there.
Yes.
You know, there are a number of theorists and a number of people like Ray Kurzweil who say that, you know, it's only a matter of time before we get to ASI, you know, super intelligence. And many predict that we're going to be at general intelligence anywhere from 3 to 5 years. What are your thoughts on that?
You want my AGI timeline? You want my PDOOM?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I don't want to speak on this as if I'm an expert. I think like I'm like very aware of how AI capabilities are improving. I think there's the goalposts have moved many times, but I think we're at an interesting point in time where AI capabilities are actually better than humans in a lot of niche categories, whether it's like playing Go or chess or being able to do like mathematical proofs.
Did you watch Thinking Game, the documentary?
I did not, no.
Okay. Watched it
Gotta
on the
watch
plane.
It.
Oh my
it.
Goodness. Watched it on the plane to Singapore next to a man who works for a company that's building the energy, the infrastructure around the world. And both of us were just kind of like, oh my goodness, because Dennis, the main, you know, the person who runs this company called DeepMind for Google now.
Yeah.
So he and some other people won the Nobel Prize in 2024 for using what really kind of is like AGI, to solve a scientific health medical issue. Yeah. I'll leave it at that. But, you know,
what's important here is that like AI is very good. Like we've got these specialized machine learning algorithms, but AI as generally as well, it's very good at some like very niche problems, but there's also some areas where it's just still subpar to your average human, where
like
it makes
writing
really dumb mistakes, like writing, like just, you know, missing out on like really simple reasoning things that like a 12-year-old would be able to do.
Actually,
and it's not just catches like counting the number of R's in strawberry, but it's more real things that affect the time horizon that of a task that AI could work on autonomously. So I think we're getting there, but I think really like 3 to 5 years, in my opinion, is like the minimum, the absolute fastest it could come. And I wouldn't be surprised if the answer is more like 5 to 10 years. We're really like a couple breakthroughs away, and who knows how quickly these breakthroughs could happen.
Got it. I want to go back to education, but before I do, just one more question around the AGI and the ASI, all of that talk that may be, you know, coming in the future. What would that mean if we do get to general intelligence for verification tools, for example?
Yeah. So what I think we're going to see a lot more of is these AI agents that are able to act autonomously as we get closer and closer to AGI. And that could mean something like, I run a small business. I want to have my army of AI agents say like, hey, go on Reddit, make some comments that promote my business. Why don't you go on Yelp, make a bunch of Yelp accounts and TripAdvisor accounts and write 5-star reviews and disparage my competitor. We're going to see like more and more of these like AIs being able to act autonomously on longer scale tasks. And I think this is going to increase the need for verification and the need for something where we could say, hey, you know, this is AI generated. We're just not going to accept this at all. We want truly human, authentic opinions here.
Okay. Now, let me move back to education, because I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, that you also took part in a study, or you have some numbers around the usage of AI and some of the concerns around that.
I can give you some numbers. I don't have a ton offhand, but what I can tell you is that AI adoption in students is at least 80% now. Wow. So almost all students know, everybody knows of AI, everybody uses it somewhat regularly. Mm-hmm. Not all of them are using it to cheat. I think many of them are using it to actually get ahead and learn more effectively, which I think is great. I have no problem with that. But I also think this is going to slowly widen the gap between the highest performing students who are able to use AI well to make their learning more effective, and the lowest achieving students who are going to be getting away with not learning as much and letting AI fill in more of the gaps here and make them appear as if they are proficient when they're not.
So with your tool, would the goal be to have universities use tools like Pangram Labs? I also understand there's like dozens of companies that are working on AI verification tools, but yours has a very high rating, ranks in the top tier of AI text detection tools in academic benchmarking and independent media testing.
Yeah, so we've been benchmarked by several different universities, including University of Chicago and University of Maryland, that found Pangram to be the most accurate AI detection tool with 1 in 10,000 false positive rate. So, and a lot of people talk about like, what if a student is falsely accused? And like, yes, this could happen. We have a non-zero false positive rate, but that's why we rely on additional signals. And our goal here is just to be simply a tool for better transparency, so instructors can understand what's going on in their classes, how their students are using AI. They can set guardrails on AI usage. And we are already in many different schools and universities, and our adoption is growing really fast.
So what you're saying, just to make sure I understand you correctly, is that these tools could be used at universities by educators, not so much to confront the student, but to understand how wide the usage is, and then to perhaps figure out ways to correct or to, you know, kind of prevent or change things so that so many students aren't simply just getting AI to generate a story or an essay.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. One of our actually most popular features for schools when we integrate into the learning management system like Canvas, and what we can do is we can allow the student to view their AI report when they submit. So it's not just like the instructor goes and sees this essay is 100% AI written, but if the student is submitting this and they're seeing, oh, Pangram thinks this is AI, then they're going to say, okay, you know, I should go back and like really just rewrite this myself, because I don't want to then have this awkward conversation with my professor.
So what you're saying really is for the individual themselves to be using a tool like Pangram, seeing how much of it is generated by AI, and then figuring out solutions. Like, I do not want it to be 100% AI, so I really need to go back and share an anecdote or really make it my own. And so you're really, is it to encourage the student themselves to kind of become more active and more aware of the use of AI?
Yeah, we want to encourage students to self-police and kind of learn and internalize what is the boundary between something that's ethical and effectively using AI versus just like using it to get through my homework and not really like worrying about what the output looks like.
I really like that concept because I am not a police officer. And I don't want to be one in the classroom. And I'm glad to hear your concept. I know other people feel differently, and it's, you know, it's to each their own.
Yeah, to each their own.
But my thing is, you know, I've been trying to run a business. I'm teaching. And, you know, for example, like social media posts, if I'm looking for search engine optimized headlines, and then alt text, and then filling in what Google wants on the YouTube, it's a lot. And so for me, I have definitely found, you know, kind of a benefit to using various AI tools. Before, I was testing these things on Grammarly, but I found that when I was using it, and maybe it's human, you know, error, but I found that they didn't do a great job of detecting when it was AI. And sometimes it was like mine and it was, you know, so I stopped using that, but now I am trying your tool.
Oh, great.
And
yeah.
I have to say your tool has been consistently correct. And like the student, if they are allowed to use such a tool like Pangram, you kind of start to see, oh, that is interesting. You know, they're saying 100% human, or this is AI assisted, light edits. It really kind of helps individuals, not just students, understand, you know, how much AI they're relying on. I've heard a lot of, I don't know if you've heard this term about AI over-reliance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think definitely like there's a concern, like you want to encourage people to use AI, but how do you know that you're over-relying on AI or not? I think it's sometimes easy to get too lost in the sauce of like, I'm just trying to like write my blog post. And then, so we have a number of writers actually who sign up for Pangram. They check their own work just because they don't want their work to be seen as slop. And so they consider that if Pangram is saying that their work is AI, then that means there's not enough of their own voice in their work, even though they were using AI to assist them. So they're going to go back and make sure more of their voice shines through so it's not seen as slop.
Definitely. Let's talk a little bit about why and how Pangram is so accurate. I mean, maybe it's the secret sauce that you can't talk about, but how do you get this tool to be so accurate when it comes to verifying the percentage even, or the kind of like degree of usage for an individual?
We have some secret sauce, but I'm happy to talk about what's public, because we also publish a lot of research papers The team, I think, is very technically proficient. We have a lot of high achievers in the field of machine learning. Both me and my co-founder come from an AI background, of course. And so I think we have always started out with having a very high bar for what success looks like and making sure we're able to achieve it. And so what a lot of this means is very clean data. So we have a very clean human side for our training data, where all the human, everything human written, which we have hundreds of millions of documents. These are all written by humans. And the AI side, we generate it all ourselves with a pretty complex set of prompt schemes to make sure that we're prompting AI, not just for the easy things like write me an essay on Moby Dick, but for the hard things like write in this style, on this topic, hit these bullet points, even going as far as to not just say like in the style of a specific person, but like here's like an initial paragraph and use the style from this paragraph and continue from there.
So by putting in the prompts yourself and generating content from the machine, if you will, is that how you're comparing what's real and what's not real?
Yeah. So we generate all this training data. So we have the human side, we have the AI side. We also have the AI assisted side, where we ask AI to take a human written document and edit it, make it more formal, change it up a bit. And so that forms our third class of AI assisted. And what we do here is then we train a very large machine learning model that is going to take in all of these document pairs, and it's going to understand the difference between this human document and this AI document. And oftentimes the decisions that it's making, it's not seeing like a single sentence or phrase and being like, that's a phrase that AI uses, therefore it's AI. Instead, it's taking 100 minor signals and different like minor decisions that AI makes more consistently than humans, and multiplying these together and sort of understanding on a large scale, we can be very confident that this document's AI written, because many of the decisions made were similar to the decisions that AI tends to make for this sort of document.
Understanding behavior and patterns.
Exactly. Human behavior is much more random. It follows like a bit of a distribution. Everybody has their own specific preferences and ways they make decisions, whereas AIs, there's really only a few of them that are major frontier models, and they all tend to like lean certain directions.
So if you're thinking about this product for students in addition to educators, what is a price that you offer for students who, you know, are already kind of dealing with tuition, housing, and all of those other costs?
So we have a free version. You can do up to 4 checks a day for free. So I think that's pretty good for anybody who's just casually writing, trying to check their own work. 4 checks a day should be more than enough. Typically, I'm not writing more than 4 pieces of like things that I want to publish in a day, or submitting more than 4 assignments in a day. Yeah. But with that said, I think we also have a couple other pricing tiers. So for educators, $20 a month, you can get up to 600 checks a month. You get the more advanced version of the model, which includes the AI assistance detection. And this is much better if you want to, say, like upload a batch of 40 documents at once and then get all the results at the same time.
Is it just for students and educators, or can PanGram be for Fortune 500 companies and newsrooms? What do you think they use?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely much more than just educators. I think education's maybe about 50% of our users, but we have tons of people in publishing, people who work in nonprofits accepting like grant applications, people who are writing grant applications and don't want their work to be seen as AI, people who are professional writers or hobby blog writers. I think it's kind of been the whole span of things. I'm even seeing more and more of people who just subscribe to PanGram because they're simply curious. They see a lot of content on the internet, on Substack or elsewhere, where they're not sure if it's AI or not, and they're just looking for something to live within their browser. We have a Chrome extension and it can just tell you when something's AI or not.
Okay, I'll definitely check that out. Now, I'm just thinking text, but what about video?
Video and image, I think they're definitely on our roadmap. I think they're also very important, and they're just getting now to the point where it's getting difficult to distinguish between AI image and real.
I'm scrolling on my Instagram feed. I'm tired now because I love animals and I love like watching those videos of cute animals doing cute things or just whatever. And I know, and now I have to tell myself, I don't think that's real.
I'm seeing all these videos of like the cats playing instruments on the like Ring doorbell video. It looks so real.
Yeah.
Clearly not.
And that's what's such a bummer. I was talking to someone who said their older parents could not tell and then talked about it, you know, like on Facebook and said, oh, did you see that? So there's also this component of media literacy. What does your company do around that part?
Yeah. So I think the best thing you could do around media literacy is just understanding what AI text looks like. And so for me and what I encourage my parents to do is they use Pangram, though if they see a news article, they're not sure like how real or if it's AI or not, they can check it with Pangram. But I also like warn my parents and grandparents about scams. I think we're very close to the point where somebody can deepfake my voice. They can deepfake my face in a FaceTime and, you know, beg for money, be like, hey, I need to make bail. Can you send me $10,000 right now? And you know, these are real scams that are happening and they're powered by AI and it's very difficult. We have a big education problem on our hands in terms of media literacy.
And it's great that you're talking to your parents and your grandparents about that too, because it's often overlooked when we talk about the use of AI and we talk about like, do people know when AI is being used and why it's important. Because when you get to the level of you could be scammed, you know, because your the voice sounds like, you know, your nephew or your son or you could lose money that way, even though this kind of scams are already happening without AI. Let's be serious. But it's
so much more convincing with AI. Like how are you supposed to know if they've completely deepfaked your grandson's voice and face?
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said earlier about AI assisted. And I was noticing like if you use a tool like Grammarly, a lot of people think, okay, I'm using Grammarly, so I'm just checking my grammar and it's not AI at all. But when I ran the test on Pangram and I wrote, I wrote my own copy and then I had Grammarly because I have it automatically part of my, you know, docs. It corrected the sentence for grammar. Then I ran it on Pangram and it said AI assisted. So let me ask you about
that. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about this. So Grammarly, I think it has obviously its grammar and spelling origins. These are core features. But I think in the last year or two, they've really expanded into more AI features to do more than just correct your spelling grammar, but be like, here, this sentence would flow better if you wrote it like this instead of this, which I think is definitely great, especially for people who are learning how to write better. But also it is AI assistance. It is large language models on the back end that are powering it. And what we don't want to say, oh, Grammarly changed a few of your sentences, so now this is AI generated. Instead, that was why we had to create this third category for AI assisted, where it's like there was both human input and AI input in this piece of writing.
Okay. So when you think about Pangram and the future of the company and the future of AI verification, where do we go from here?
It's a great question. I think we're really like just getting started. I think this problem as it is right now, it's a major problem for only a few industries, education, publishing, writing. But I think as we continue to grow, the problem's going to grow and it's going to hit the rest of the world as adoption grows. And so our goal is just be here, continue to be the best AI detector in the world, and to keep innovating so that we can catch the latest frontier models such that, you know, when GPT-6 comes out, GPT-7 comes out, we're still able to confidently say, this is AI generated, this is AI assisted, and this is authentic and human.
Okay, now I want to throw in a kind of a twister question as we start to wrap up. I'm watching this new show called Pluribus.
Ooh, yeah, I have not seen it yet.
So what's interesting is, what about the argument that why don't we all sound alike and why don't we all just adopt, let's say, AI? And everyone understands, you know, when you write an email, it's AI. When you write a social media post, it's AI. When you write a blog post, it's AI. If everyone, and this is why it reminds me of Pluribus, and if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to say much more than that, but I will say it did give me that feel of why not? Why not all of us just kind of move toward the acceptance of standardized or, you know, kind of language and use it? Yeah.
I mean, great question. I think thought a lot about this too, but personally, I think especially with like art and writing, what is interesting is actually when one deviates from the norm. I don't think it's particularly interesting to sound exactly like the median human out there. I think that's how you create very bland writing that people are uninterested in. People are actually interested in things that are more on the fringe, something that's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that before. So both in terms of ideas, but style, it's like, let's go a little bit farther outside of the norm and it'll be more interesting. And so like,
are you a writer? You know, it's so funny. Like all of my colleagues would be like, yes, Max, talk to us, because that's how most of my colleagues feel in the writing space. You know,
I have some writer friends. I'm a little bit plugged into the community of like sci-fi
and artists
and science fiction.
Dystopian.
Yeah. Yeah. I read Clark's World. It's short stories. It's very nice.
We're getting to the time we're starting to wrap up. What are some suggestions that you would have for listeners about what to do next, products, steps to take?
Yeah, so not to be too self-promotional, but so Pangram, obviously like the free version, I think everybody should at least try it. You can get the Chrome extension and then anything you see on the internet that you're not so sure about, you can select and then right-click, check for AI content. So I found that's just really fun and kind of enlightening to see dead internet theory, like how much of the internet is AI generated today. Yeah. But I think beyond that, yeah, just like really encouraging anybody who is either a writer or an educator to think deeply about what they want the state of the world to look like next year, 2026, 2027. And then we're working to make that happen, but it requires a bunch of other people too to be setting the policies within education or setting the policies within like publishing to shape the world in the direction that we want it to preserve this human authenticity.
You just brought up something I think is really important. By being involved in the discussion or even just kind of experimenting with AI, you know, I tell this to folks who ask, is then you get to start to see what the problems are. And then you get to start to say and voice, hey, this is not okay. This is what I would change. And that is one of the reasons I became very curious and involved about AI in a space where you're right, most people don't want AI in the storytelling. When you think of video, are there any tools right now that people could use to help verify like the video they just watched on TikTok is AI generated?
I unfortunately don't know any good tools for imagery video.
Okay.
I know Gemini, Nano Banana, they have like this little watermark in the bottom right where it's the Gemini logo, but oftentimes like it's cropped out.
Exactly.
It's
That's
really
what
hard.
I noticed. Yeah. Like when Sora videos first came out, I could definitely see the watermark. But what I'm noticing is people just put something over the watermarks. So I'm just like, okay, that's not helping. But Nano Banana might be something to check out.
That's the Gemini image model.
Got you. How can people who are interested in learning more about Pangram or about you, how can they get in touch with you?
You can find us on pangram.com. We have a contact form, which we're actually very active in. We also have a Discord community. So if you scroll to the footer of pangram.com, you can join our Discord community. We have people asking. Sometimes they send a piece. They're like, is this AI? Or they provide feedback on the product. And that's also super helpful.
That's great. So getting in touch is through the Discord, which you'll find at the bottom of the page, and then sending a contact on the contact page of Pangram.
Yeah.
Ways to get in touch with you if they want to know more. Trying the free version is a great way to learn more about this product. Any last thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, thank you so much for having me. I think like this is, it's really important to like spread this message about what we're doing to different communities. I think like I'm most active actually on Twitter in the AI community, which I know, you know, a lot of people say I should get on Blue Sky or whatever. I got to get on Blue Sky. But yeah, definitely there's just like, I think the world is sort of like fractured into so many like distinct communities that it's great to have cross-community outreach and make sure that everybody knows about, you know, what's going on.
Yeah, Well, thank you for all of the information that you've shared with me. And thank you for, showing me that there's a great tool out there that can help me do my job. So with that, everyone, I want to again thank Max Spiro for joining us here on A Journalist's Guide to AI. You can learn more about Max, the program, Pangram, the tools that he mentioned in the show notes. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to our YouTube channel, also on Spotify and Apple, and please leave a review if you have time. Until next time, I'm Yumi Wilson, your host. And this is A Journalist's Guide to AI.